We are recording. Thank you.
Okay. Good evening. And welcome to the Seattle Community Services District. May we have a roll call, please?
Yes, Director Villa?
Here.
Director Gibson?
Here.
Director Applogal?
Here.
Vice President White?
Here.
And President Austin.
Here. Okay, we'll do the flag salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. All right, thank you. That brings us to agenda review. Is there anything anyone wants to review on the agenda?
I have nothing.
Okay, then can we get a motion?
I'll make a motion. We approve the agenda as presented.
Okay. You don't need a roll call for this. You can just say all in favor.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. We will move on now to item 5, public comment for matters that are not on tonight's agenda. Any member of the public may address anything within our jurisdiction of, that is not on the agenda. 3 minutes.
Yes, and just to remind the public, if you could please hit the *9 on your phone, if you're on your phone, and if you're on your computer or tablet, just the raise hand button to notify you of public comment. And as of right now, I have 2 hands raised, and I am going to unmute the first speaker, Ms. Castellanova.
Good evening, everyone. Am I heard? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Good evening, everyone. I want to tell you that the Oceana Beach Community Association finished the murals project, finally. We got the second one done. Our artist was taking art classes in Brazil. And as soon as he came back, he finished. It is an exquisite representation of seashore birds that we can see on Oceano Beach. It is on La Tapatia. Please go by and look at it. It's nothing like what he did at Chacho. We only had an eighth of the money available. So we regret that we could not do anything more colorful and bigger. However, it is beautiful, and we're looking for more grants to do more projects. I also wanted to let you know that we, the Oceano Beach Community Association, held a community cleanup last weekend. There were 8 people that showed up. We did the Pier Avenue, the 4 dunes, and the beach community. We picked a tremendous amount of trash. I'm happy to say that we had wannabe supervisor Jimmy Paulding show up and help in the cleaning. We had ex-longtime supervisor Evelyn Delaney show up. So I'm very happy to hear that Oceano is on people's mind. And we had a wonderful time. While I was picking trash on Pier Avenue, 3 emergency vehicles came speeding by. There was a major accident on the dunes. I was sorry to hear, and it wasn't pleasant to have emergency vehicles run on Pier Avenue and the beach. And there was also another major accident Sunday afternoon. So even though there are fewer vehicles than pre-COVID, accidents do still happen. And I look forward to a time when there will be no more driving on Oceano Beach and dunes. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Is there anyone else?
Yes. Then I have the next hand raised, and it is Ms. Tacker, so I will unmute her.
Good evening, Julie Tacker. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Very good. Thank you. On December 23rd, your board gave direction to staff to work with partner agencies of Central Coast Blue and return with an agreement that may include, but not limited to, establishing the right to pump a proportional share of the project yield, provide a proportional share of water to other agencies from existing Oceano CSD supplies, groundwater, et cetera, coordinate with Lopez Storage Rights. OCSD would not be obligated to fund or guarantee the rate covenants. Grant funding would be equitably distributed to with your disadvantaged community status. Grant funds proportionately distributed to your communities, you and Grover, and cooperate with exchanging water amongst participating agencies, if possible or practical. I haven't seen that come back to your board. A few weeks after this, there was an item in front of the Coastal Commission that Jim Lewis, the city manager of Pismo Beach, said that Oceano had come on board. That's a direct quote that he told the Coastal Commission. Oceano has come on board. You weren't on board in January when he said that. And you're still not on board because this agreement hasn't been either written or presented to you. You authorized Mr. Minnery $15,000 to write such a thing. I'm sure you've seen in the press that Arroyo Grande may be pulling out of Central Coast Blue for its reasons. The majority reason is that the governance structure, it puts Pismo Beach as the king. And you know, no Brown Act open meetings. That's all problematic. And your district hasn't even talked about that. So, or the project labor agreement that is also a sticky wicket for them. I hope you never talk about it again, but I imagine that you will. And I'm just thinking that, you know, 4 or 5 months later, the direction given in December hasn't been carried through. So I'll look forward to any discussion you might have in the future, but this was mainly a reminder. Even though the Pismo Beach has been saying you're one of the partners, you're clearly not, nor should you be. Thank you very much.
And then the next speaker I have is Sheila Eckhart. So I will unmute the next speaker.
Hello? Sheila?
Unmute, there we go. Okay, my name is Sheila Eckert. I'm a resident of Oceano and I'm a board member on the Oceano Advisory Committee. At our monthly meeting on April 15th, 2021, the Oceano Advisory Committee, Council, discussed its role in planning for the proposed shutdown of the Pier Avenue vehicle entrance to the beach on July 1st, 2022. I would like to read you the following letter we sent to all parties concerned entitled The Pier Avenue Cul-de-sac, Public Plaza, a Pedestrian Beach Access and Enhanced Parking Access Project. And it says, the Oceano Advisory Council is the only county recognized local public participation voice for the Oceano community. Our mission is to provide opportunities for the public education and input on planning, land use proposals, and other issues which impact the community. The Coastal Commission has directed that the end of Pier Avenue be shut down as a vehicle access to the beach on July 1st, 2022. The decision was influenced by environmental and economic justice considerations. The State Parks Works Program original recommendations for the enhanced vehicle access at Pier Avenue will need to be shifted 180 degrees to a pedestrian and community-friendly designation project. The Oceano Advisory Council is a stakeholder and wishes to be actively involved in the decision making process. We will initiate and help lead community education and needs assessment as they relate to the project. We will solicit and collaborate with community members and groups and such others as, and not limited to, State Parks, Coastal Commission, and San Luis Obispo County Supervisors. We will do this by providing a venue of public education and the gathering of public input regarding functions and design elements for the product. We understand that our role is advisory and our goal is to do the best we can representing the Oceano community. This letter was sent by our chairperson, Aline Villa, on April 27, 2021. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you.
And with that, that was the last hand I had raised. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. That will bring us now to our special presentations and reports.
Excuse me, President Austin, if I could just follow up on one of the public comments regarding Central Coast Blue. I've raised concerns before about Pismo Beach saying that Oceano is somehow part of this project, even though we're still exploring our options. Mr. Clemens, where are we with that? And is there any way to rein in Pismo so they're not misleading people about the level of our participation at this point?
Did you want to answer that, Mr. Clemens? Or?
Sure. So basically, we are taking a wait and see approach on Central Coast Blue. Obviously, the cities are having their issues, and so it would kind of be inappropriate for us to spend any time or money on Oceano possible participation until we understand what the cities intend to do. So that's really the approach that I'm taking, is we're waiting to see what happens with the cities, and then we'll move on from there.
Okay, thank you.
Could you remind Jim Lewis that we are not a participant at this point? I didn't hear his comments to the Coastal Commission, but that's concerning if he's making misrepresentations like that.
Yeah, I haven't heard the comments myself either. Certainly, our board does support the preliminary efforts of Central Coast Blue. That's an action your board has taken twice in the past. So project development efforts, you certainly support. And, you know, whether we want to argue over semantics, I don't know. But I prefer to spend my time on more productive issues.
Thank you, Mr. Clemens.
Okay, I will bring it up in future agenda items, but I think I would like to suggest that the board consider weighing in in support of Arroyo Grande's positions on public participation in a project labor agreement.
Okay, we'll move on to our staff reports. And I will, Commander Wells, are you with us this evening from the South Sheriff's Station?
I am. Good evening, members of the board, members. Is everybody hear me okay?
Yes, I believe so.
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Well, good evening. It's a pleasure to speak with you again. Wanted to talk just a little bit about a couple of issues that we've got going on in the Oceano area, but I'll lead off with some of our statistics for the month of March. The South Station responded to 548 calls for service, generating 139 reports, 30 of which led to filings with the district attorney for charges, and 30 that were cleared by arrest. We've assigned a new community action team, collateral and deputy at the station to deal with homeless liaison issues and also to be part of our community action team in the South County. That deputy has been dealing with one of the major issues that I'd like to talk about, and that's the illegal parking and camping on city streets affecting both 17th Street and Pier Avenue. We have a very good relationship with the CHP to try and resolve that problem. However, they're under marching orders from the governor to not remove anybody from their home and not tow abandoned vehicles that appear to be domiciles currently. We've got our finger on that pulse, though, and the moment that prohibition lifts, we will. But at the current time, we're contacting the residents, asking them to move to at least different locations throughout the time frame so they're not becoming an eyesore for our visitors to the area, our residents. And we're also starting to more aggressively tag those vehicles for towing, giving warnings to people that they can be towed at some point in the future. We're just waiting for the CHP to be able to enforce those rules as they have in the past. The 17th Street issue is another one that has come to light. It's been going on for quite a while, and our deputies spend a lot of time on outreach out there, and our community action team has had a lot of contact out there as well. And then lastly, I'd like to just say a sad day this last week in Arroyo Grande. The former chief of police, Bo Pryor, passed away suddenly. It'd be a great loss to the community. I think his service is coming up this week on Thursday. But he was a great partner to law enforcement, a great partner to the community, and a remembrance of him is going to be heartfelt for sure. So I will happily field any questions if anybody has any about current issues or anything that you'd like to talk about.
Does anyone have any questions for Commander Wells?
Yeah, I do. What do you mean by community action teams?
So the Board of Supervisors, in conjunction with the Sheriff's Office, approved funding for the Community Action Team, which is intended for our critical incident training, the CIT training that you've probably heard quite a bit about. We have one deputy assigned with a mental health worker that works out of our main station on Kansas Avenue. And then we have collaterally assigned deputies because we just don't have the funding for full-time positions at the other stations that provide outreach to the homeless community, acting as a liaison with the public organizations that assist the homeless, and then providing them services and getting them proper care and services that they may need.
Thank you for that. And what about catalytic converters? Are they popular in Oceano too, like the rest of Arroyo
and Grover? Oh, absolutely. Yeah, catalytic converter theft is one of our major thefts right now. It's had a downturn in the last few weeks, but I anticipate because of the precious metals that are contained within and the state of our economy, we're gonna see that consistently until we're able to do something, you know, a whole lot about it. A lot of times these thieves are under the cover of darkness and they are operating with power tools. So again, as I've reiterated many times, it's very important that if you see something suspicious, you need to report it immediately to the sheriff's office so we can respond and attempt to interject before the person gets away with the crime and stop more crimes in progress. But a lot of times these things happen in the dark of night and they're not even noticed until the following day when someone starts their car sounds a lot different than it did the day before. That's the first that they're alerted that their catalytic converter might be missing.
Okay,
thank you for answering my question.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Anyone else have any questions?
Yeah, I've got a couple of questions. Does the county have a safe parking program so that people who are currently living in their vehicles on the streets of Oceano could go to a location nearby where they could park safely instead of being on the street?
Yeah, I know we did initially when COVID first started up the issues from the beginning. I don't know that we have that designated with the same vigor that it was before, but that's something I'll look into and get back to you.
Thank you. It seems like it's still needed. And then I was also wondering if the Sheriff's Office is planning to devote any additional resources to fireworks law enforcement in Oceano this coming July, especially.
Yeah, so we have started talking about upstaffing for July 4th, possibly using some of our bike patrol to be a little bit better at sneaking up on people when they're firing off illegal fireworks. And then we're also in discussions with CAL FIRE to, like we did last year, partner a CAL FIRE law enforcement officer with a deputy to provide an easy resource to cite people when we do encounter them firing illegal fireworks. But the biggest thing is going to be increasing staffing and having our bike patrol out there. I think it's going to make a big impact.
That's good to hear. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Good question. Have you started getting calls about fireworks? I've been hearing a little bit, but part of that is coming from Fair Oaks, from Roy Grandy.
Okay. We haven't gotten any calls that I'm aware of in recent weeks, but I imagine as it gets warmer in the you know, the visitors start to show up in droves as they've already started, then we're probably going to see a little bit of uptick in firework calls in general.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Okay, is that it for all the questions? Okay, thank you, Commander Wells. I want to, on behalf of our Oceano, I'd like to extend our sympathies and condolences to the family of Chief Pryor and all the residents and friends of his in Rio Grande and all the law enforcement agencies. I know it was a great loss, and we extend our sympathies. Thank you.
Second that. Yeah.
Thank you all, and have a very nice evening.
Okay, that brings us to Chief Lieberman. Is he in?
He's not with us tonight. He indicated there was nothing significant to report.
Okay, we'll bring us now to our Utility Systems Manager, Mr. Marchino.
Good evening, Board. Tony Marchino, Utility Systems Manager. So Lopez is currently at 38.1% full, which is 18,818 acre feet. For the month of March, we had zero SSOs. We had delivered just over 58 acre feet of Lopez water. We are still doing our daily rounds and weekly, monthly samples. We had 17 work orders, 16 USAs, 11 customer service calls, 2 after hours call outs. The first one was for the office phones. There was an issue in transferring them. The second was a water line break at 1860 Front Street that we got it repaired. We will most likely be replacing that line here in the near future. We raised and concreted in a few meter boxes on 19th Street. We had to replace a service line that was leaking on Russ Court from the main to the meter. We slurry backfilled the trench, just over 3.5 yards of slurry. And then we also had to pave back the trench, which was approximately 3 tons of asphalt. I attended an AWWA 2-day virtual class regarding lead and water quality. We had rereads, highs, lows, leak notifications. We recycled 2 loads of concrete and asphalt. We had to replace a water valve box on Jetty and concrete it in. There was a community cleanup on Maui Circle and Security Court that we had a 40-yard roll-off dropped off at that location. It was a really good cleanup. They actually filled it up very well. Still doing trash pickups. 4311 tickets were called in. Still doing meter replacements. We had a power outage at the lift station. We're continuing to do hydrant maintenance, and we handed out door hangers. Any questions?
Any questions for Tony?
All right, thank you.
Tony, I'd just like to thank you and the crew for all your assistance on the cleanup that we did last weekend on Maui Circle. It was, you guys were a big help in getting the roll off, and the neighborhood really appreciated it. It was a great volunteer effort by our community down here. Thank you.
It really was. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll move on then to our board of directors and outside committee reports.
How about, would you like
your general? I'm sorry, I skipped you. Go ahead, Mr.
That's Chris. Okay. You can skip me if you want. That's fine.
No. We want to hear from you.
All right. So since our last meeting, our staff has been extremely busy. We submitted all the required supplemental documents to the State Water Board in order to continue to qualify for the Prop 1 grant that we were awarded. The next steps now with the State Water Board are to negotiate a financing agreement and finalize that. We also had a meeting with the County Clerk Recorder, Tommy Gong, regarding redistricting efforts, and the County Clerk Recorder's office is extremely concerned about the process. If we think it's difficult from our perspective having to district Oceano, then you have to lay in all the other districts that are doing the same thing, like perhaps the Port San Luis Harbor District, and then the county supervisorial districts. And that all impacts his voting precincts. So he's got a lot of work ahead of him, and he was just trying to encourage cooperation amongst the various agencies that will be doing this. And hopefully we'll be able to assist him with those coordinated efforts. We also had a meeting with the Countywide Water Action Team, which is a countywide staff of various water agencies. And we reviewed the Regional Water Infrastructure Resiliency Plan, which will soon be released by the county. Basically, that's a kind of a measure of the resiliency to drought for the various water agencies and water suppliers in the county. So we look forward to that being released by the county fairly soon. Our NCMA technical group met, and the 2020 annual report will soon be released. We probably will have that on our agenda in May. Unfortunately, the data shows that water levels in the groundwater basin are dropping, as would be expected, as we're getting closer and closer to drought conditions. And we also met with Zone 3 Technical Advisory Group, again, discussing, drought actions and things we can do as agencies. And so what we've done, and what I encourage the other state water contractors to do, at the beginning of the water year, which was April 1st, we started taking as much state water as we can, which currently the allocation is 5%. However, because of the county's unallocated state water that they have and the water that we have stored in San Luis Reservoir, we should be able to get as much state water as we need. And by taking state water, that allows us to leave our Lopez water in the lake should we need it in the future. Now, the current contracts would have us use it or lose it for the year, but we're hoping to get those contracts amended by the end of this calendar year. So what that would mean is all the water that we've saved in Lopez would actually be credited to our storage account. So that's the operational issues we're trying to work out now in order to put us in the best position should we see an extended drought. We also met with IWMA and their consultant on the implementation of SB 1383, which involves organic waste. That consultant will be assisting us to amend our franchise agreement. So we would expect to have that amendment to our franchise agreement in the next couple months for your action. Also, SB 1383 will require us to amend our ordinance. So that will come later this calendar year. Also, we've been cooperating with county parks in order to install a couple of water bottle refill stations. That's grant funded from the IWMA, and we're partnering with the county parks to put a water bottle refill station at the county park and at the county campground. We will provide the water bottle refill station, and they will install that with their own maintenance crew. So that will save us money on the installation costs. And with that, I think that's all I have to report.
All right, thank you very much. Any comments to Mr. Clemens?
Yes, are those the only two locations where water bottle refill stations will be placed in the community?
Yeah, currently we had budgeted for two water bottle refill stations. Technically, because we're saving on the installation, we may be able to squeeze another refill station and locate that somewhere else if possible, but also we're going to be adding recycle bins to our street refuse bins that currently exist. So the goal was to be able to fund both of those. So we'll see how much money we have left once we add those recycling bins to our streets.
Because having a refill station at Oceana Park is a good idea. I'm just not sure how accessible the one at the campground would be to the actual people who live in Oceana versus visitors.
Well, yeah, the goal of this program is not necessarily to serve those in Oceano, but to have a location that diverts as much from the landfill as possible. So I think the campground would be a good location for that.
Is the campground a big source of plastic bottle waste?
Yeah, I would say it probably is. And also there's the ease of having it on a public, public property rather than having to try to work out agreements with private property owners. I think a good spot would be the beach, working with state parks. So that could be a possibility.
At the last meeting, you said that the utility bills would, that were recently mailed would include a mailer about the new fireworks ordinance. I did not see that in my bill. Has that been delayed?
They should have gone out. Carrie, do we have any update on that?
Yeah, it went out, but it was a half sheet. It wasn't a full page.
I didn't have anything in my bill. I was specifically looking. So
it might have missed a couple bills, but I will.
Yes, that's good, but. And then I was wondering,
I got it.
What is the status of e-billing?
So we just have, Will.
Go ahead, Carrie.
Okay. So we just got the credit card. This is about our fourth month. And the next step is to work with Tyler, the actual software we use to do the billing. Because right now we're using Allpaid for the credit cards, but we'll use Tyler for the e-billing and we'll have people sign up. So I would say not the one that's about to go out at the end of May, but it would be the one after.
Okay. I'm glad to hear it's coming soon. And then the NCMA 2020 report, will that be on the OCSD website when it's available, or how will that be offered to the public?
Yeah, so we'll post, we have them all posted on our website. So we'll add it to that section of our website. In addition, we'll have a board item that we do every year to discuss it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, is there anyone else? And we'll move on now. Thank you, Mr. Clemens. We'll move on now to our board of directors report. So our first up is Director Villa.
Unmute myself, that's better. On March 18th, the Oceana Advisory Council met. And there at that meeting was a short meeting because we only had like three people there, several absent. So we did some minor changes to the bylaws, basically just increasing membership. And we added a questionnaire because the letter of intent sometimes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
I can hear you.
Okay. You looked a little frozen there. just minor changes for the bylaws, like I stated. We increased the membership for the council members from 9 to 11, and then we added a questionnaire. So we'd, on top of the letter of intent, so you can answer some of our questions. Sometimes the letter of intent doesn't answer fully questions that we would like to know beforehand. So then on the 15th, this last April 15th, we had another meeting, and there basically again, we discussed the vacation rental ordinance for Oceano, which we have been working diligently on for the whole year. And I think this is like the third or fourth draft, and I think it's like the final one, hopefully. We have been working closely with Choi Young. Unfortunately, I haven't heard from him for over a month or so, and there's rumors that he might have quit the county. I don't know. But we will continue working with the county. Hopefully get somebody else that'll come to our meetings on a regular basis. It was very helpful. Once we get all this, approved by someone from the county to where they could, you know, overlook it. We hope to place it on our new website. We're working on a new website. I think it should be up and running like less than a month. So I'm very happy about that. It looks a lot better. So once we get that going, we're going to place it there and also involve the public, you know, have a special meeting, get more public input and educate them. And hopefully they'll support us so that when we go to the county, we'll have a lot more support and hopefully get approved. As I stated before, having a vacation rental ordinance is very important to preserving the character of Oceana. We want to maintain the quiet, nice, small town character of our town, right? Where there's plenty of parking spaces on our streets. If you go to nearby, you know, towns or cities, some of them are very overcrowded and loud. So we want to maintain the character, and it's important to have this ordinance so that we can do that. You know, regulation is very important for towns and cities to maintain a good quality of life. Also at this meeting, we discussed, as our new council member, Sheila Eckert, gave her a public comment. She was approved, voted in as a new council member at this meeting. And we discussed our role in the closing of Pierre Avenue and, you know, what we hope that our input will be taken seriously. We are the main voice from the community of Oceano to the county. So it is very important. That's why we decided to unanimously voted to approve a resolution, and I sent it out, emailed it out to all appropriate stakeholders. All our board should have received it. Also, and it's also included in our agenda packet as an addendum. It was just emailed, so you'll see it there in our packet also. You would like to review it. Basically, we're just saying that we, you know, need to be involved. We should be involved. We understand that we are an advisory council and our power is just to advise, and we're going to do the best that we can to advise the needs and desires of the community of Oceano as to what we want to see there in Pierre Avenue. It's very important that this be a smooth and prosperous transition for Oceano. And for it to be smooth and prosperous, we have to get it developed as soon as possible. Right now, the way it is, it's basically not suitable for, it's not very pedestrian friendly, in other words. And we want it to be attractive and pedestrian friendly so that people that come visit our beach and even community members will feel safe, and they'll feel like it's an inviting area for them to be at. So that's why we want to do outreach and see what the public, what our community wants for that area. And we will be doing as, you know, much outreach and education as possible. And hopefully we believe we are stakeholders. So hopefully the county will involve us and state parks and will involve us as much as possible. So that's about it.
Okay. Director Gibson, do you have any reports?
Yes. So on April 7th, I had a Water Resources Advisory Committee, and we discussed the drought a little bit. And, you know, it's already April, and most of California is already in at least a moderate to extreme drought. So not a good situation. And we mainly discussed the State Water Project water management tools. That's our focus. And we added Pavel Ogren to our ad hoc subcommittee. Okay. And then on April 8th, I attended the joint meeting of Central Coast Water Authority and the Slo County Flood Control District and the State Water Subcontractors Advisory Committee. And basically there we discussed the water management strategies and needs to maximize state water supplies in our county and Santa Barbara County.
Thank you. That's it.
You're muted,
I'm President. Sorry, yes, I'm sorry. Vice President White, do you have any reports?
Yes. April 16th, we had another very routine meeting of the Five Cities Fire Authority. We approved a comprehensive purchasing policy and procedures manual for Five Cities Fire. We have been using the policy originated for Roy Grandy. We wrote our own. And then with all the reports about cars becoming more difficult to obtain, we advanced the plans. We had planned on the next budget year to purchase a car for the fire chief, but we went ahead and authorized the ordering of a Chevy Tahoe four-wheel drive SUV for $43,000 with, and then it'll have another $18,000 allocated for lighting and radios and stuff. It's in this year's budget for the vehicle replacement, so we didn't have to make any kind of budget transfer. And one of the problems, the fire chief had a smaller car, but so often he ends up transporting other fire people, fire crews. The truck has to go to repair, somebody drives it, he brings them home, so he needs a bigger car, a bigger truck. And we're making use of the California Department of General Services pre-negotiated contracts, but it's interesting, it works through the Roy Grandy Chevrolet dealer as well, so they also get some credit for it. And then our May meeting is going to be budget. So by the, and I can say ahead of time, we're working on having the same budget we've had for the this year for next year. That's kind of what the joint agreement stands for. And so that's what we're working on. So any questions?
Okay, that's it. All right. Thank you. Director Rapogo.
Yes, at the IWMA meeting on the 14th, the polystyrene ordinance survived attempts by the conservatives to repeal it when Slo City Representative Jan Marks invoked a provision in the JPA requiring a supermajority vote. Said it would have needed 8 votes to enact the repeal, and there were not 8 votes, there were only 7. So the polystyrene ban is now in effect, but staff was directed to focus on education and not enforcement at this point, since we're still in the pandemic and businesses may be in recovery phase from that. However, this may lead to some of the northern cities and the county making good on their veiled threats to withdraw from the IWMA. I had asked Mr. Minery previously what would be the effect on the authorized districts, including the Oceano CSD, if the county withdraws, if that would also withdraw the authorized districts from the IWMA, or if they might remain in a new, would probably be a new agreement. But perhaps you can answer that now, Mr. Minery.
Would you like to finish your report, and then if the...
That was the summary of my report from the meeting. Okay.
I will say, for full disclosure, I am legal counsel for the Integrated Waste Management Authority. And I think that at this point, the options available, should the county or any other agencies withdraw, are many and varied, and there's certainly a lot to look at. And so I could not give you any definitive response on this issue at this time.
Right. Given the existing legal agreements, is there an immediate effect on the authorized districts if the county pulls out?
I think we need to wait and see what that would look like. According to the joint powers agreement, the obligations made prior to any withdrawal remain in effect. And so there's, again, there's a lot to look at, and I am looking at that issue, though, because the authorized district certainly, well, it's a lot to, there's a lot of moving parts to this. The authorized districts joined the Integrated Waste Management Authority through a memorandum of agreement after the formation of the Joint Powers Agreement. They are not officially members of the JPA. However, they have a voting seat and the rights and obligations as if they were members of the JPA. It is, of course, an interesting question because the authorized districts that have garbage authority are certainly impacted. However, you are within the county that does have the broader powers of land use, et cetera. So I'm not prepared to give a complete analysis of that issue. It's far too complicated, but I am in fact looking at it on behalf of the IWMA so that we can advise what the options are and what they would look like.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, that brings us to the report, my report of the San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. And our redundancy project is progressing as planned with no issues. The plant's running on great condition, no issues there. And the only other thing, we're in the process still working with the Rio Grande and Grover Beach on doing the billing to the property tax rolls. That's in the process right now. And that's all I have to report on that. Okay, so open this to public comment now on the special presentations and the board of directors reports.
And just to remind the public, it's *9 if you're on the phone, and it's the raise hand button if you are on your computer or tablet. And with that, President Austin, I have no hands raised.
All right, thank you very much. That brings us now to the consent agenda. We have the minutes for the meeting of March 24th, cash disbursements, and the district's fiscal year 2021 quarter three treasury report. Anybody want to pull anything for discussion? Or?
I don't want to pull anything, but I do have one question concerning the minutes from the March 24th meeting.
Okay. Anything else? Anyone else? Go ahead.
No. My question is, in future agenda items, the last one is letter to IWMA regarding special districts representative / alternate April 2021. Mr. Clemens, this is our only meeting in April and it's not on the agenda, so when is that planned to be brought forward?
Yes, so the IWMA discussed that at an executive committee. So it seemed to be a little bit of a moot point, although I think now the more immediate concern would be the potential pullout of the county from the IWMA and the impacts of that. Certainly, I think we, if the IWMA were to continue as an entity, we would want it to make sure the JPA is revised to more clearly delineate how special districts are represented on that board. But so we're not going to discuss it in April. My understanding is that the county will discuss the IWMA pullout maybe in July. So prior to that time, we should probably discuss this under future agenda items.
I would suggest sooner rather than later. I neglected to mention that the authorized district representative, Mr. Robert Enns from Cayuga Sanitary District, despite having clear direction from the only authorized districts that weighed in, there were three letters in support of the polystyrene ordinance, and he still voted for repeal. So he is not representing the interests of the special districts at this point and ought to be replaced. So hopefully we can pull that forward.
All right, thank you.
That was the only question I had.
Okay. So I'll open this up to public comment on the consent agenda. Is there any public comment?
Yes, and just to remind the public, it's star 9 on the phone, and then if you're on your computer or tablet, it's the raise hand button.
Okay.
And with that, President Austin, I have no hands raised.
All right, thank you.
I make a motion. We approve the consent agenda as presented.
I second.
Okay, may we get a roll call, please? We have a motion and a second.
Yes, Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Plogle?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
And President Austin?
Yes. Okay, that brings us down to our business items. So we'll do 8A first. Did you want to give the report on that, Mr. Clemens? The approval of the resolution authorizing the financial agreement, payment instructions provided for the refinance of the district's outstanding CalPERS unfunded accrued liability?
Yes, and I'll start off by saying I'm kind of excited about this item. Maybe because it involves finance and that's my background, but typically, you know, we bring forth items to your board on how best to spend the community's money. This is an item where we're bringing forward where you actually get to save the community money, so much so that it's over $300,000 in savings. So that's a little bit of my excitement. Is you have an opportunity to save the community money tonight. With us tonight is our financial advisor, Cal Muni, represented by Dmitry Semenov, and Mr. Cameron Wiest, our bond counsel. So I believe Dmitry is going to give you a brief presentation on the results of our RFP that we sent to banks to refinance our CalPERS UAL, and after which we can answer any questions.
Okay. Good evening. Welcome. So is Dmitry going to? Okay, here we go.
Good evening, President Austin and members of the board. Let me pull up the presentation. Can everybody see the screen?
Yes.
All right, perfect. Okay. So to remind everybody the process that we went through, on January 27th, the board gave direction to pursue the refunding of the UAL. And over the next couple of months, a lot of work had to be done. We worked very extensively with the staff to put together a very complete due diligence packet to distribute to the banks that specialize in servicing public agencies. And on April 1st, the district distributed the request for proposals to 17 banks. And the banks had several weeks to review the RFPs, ask questions, and come back with the proposals. And throughout the whole period, there was a lot of outreach to make sure that all the lenders were paying attention and concentrating on this RFP. The proposals were due on April 19th, and two proposals were received. In our estimate, or in our assessment, both proposals are extremely competitive. One of the challenges that the district ran into in this RFP is a lot of banks, they stepped away because they were looking for financing of at least $1 million or more. In your case, it is right around $900,000. So several banks that normally would be interested in helping agencies refund their unfunded liabilities couldn't get there just because of the size of the transaction. But the two proposals that came in are actually very competitive. And from what we're seeing in the market, they very fairly represent what other agencies are receiving at this time. So we reviewed and assessed the two proposals, and we will go through the details of them over the next several slides. Today, you know, we're reviewing the bids with you, and then assuming you decide to move forward with the refunding, tomorrow we will notify, or the district will notify the selected bidder. And then over the next several weeks, the documents will be finalized and the transaction will be closed. So this is the overview of the timeline. And here's the summary of the proposals that we received. Two banks came through, First Foundation Bank and Umpqua Bank. Both banks are extremely knowledgeable in the municipal finance space. They specialize in serving public agencies and are very, very knowledgeable in terms of how public finance transactions should be done. So in both cases, it's a very, from that standpoint, it's a very comparable experience. And both institutions would be very reasonable to work with because they've done a lot of financings for public agencies. The First Foundation Bank, both banks came in with proposal for 15 years. First Foundation Bank offered the interest rate of 3.46%. Umpqua Bank offered the interest rate of 3.59%. Under the next two columns, they compared the lowest payments and the highest payments that the district would be looking at in the next 10 years. And the reason why 10 years is selected is because the safety plan, the pension plan of the district, is currently amortized over that period. So under CalPERS, you're looking at payments from $67,000 to $92,000, where under the First Foundation Bank, the lower limit is about the same, and the upper limit is only $81,500. Under Umpqua Bank, very similar situation. The upper limit is $82,700, give or take. These are very rough. These are estimates, but some things may change depending on the actual closing date. And we tend to concentrate on a more conservative analysis here. So it is quite possible that the results might be slightly even better. And then under the First Foundation Bank proposal, the district is currently estimated to save $328,000, almost $329,000 over the next 20 years. And with Umpqua Bank, the savings are slightly smaller because of the higher interest rate, $316,317,000. That's the estimate of the savings. That's after all the costs of issuance, after all the fees that are paid for this financing. So, I think when we talked in January, we were looking at the 15-year savings estimate of about $290,000. So this is significantly better than what we initially anticipated. This graph is the summary of the two proposals. The red line is what your payments will look like under the First Foundation proposal. And the green line is the Umpqua Bank proposal. And the vertical blue lines is your current payments under CalPERS. So the selected line, whether green or red, will replace the vertical blue bars. So it will completely repay the outstanding balances of the unfunded liabilities with CalPERS. And instead of making payments to CalPERS, you will be making payments to the bank. And this is a more detailed analysis of the two proposals. First Foundation Bank, besides the lower interest rate, they have a slightly more flexible prepayment penalty. You have prepayment penalties in the first 6 years, and then in year seven and after, there's no prepayment penalty for any type of prepayment. They have a longer rate lock of 60 days. The collateral structure is identical for both proposals. It's the net revenue pledge. But First Foundation Bank has slightly higher debt service coverage ratio, which is the ratio by which your net revenues need to be covering the debt service. So they're requiring 1.25 times debt service coverage ratio, which is in line with what the USDA, if the district ever decides to pursue that type of financing, would expect. So 1.25 is pretty standard. And they have a $10,000 legal fee that will be paid out of the proceeds. Umpqua Bank, slightly higher interest rate, 3.59 rather than 3.46. Under no period in time, there will be a period when you can prepay the credit without a prepayment penalty. The rate is locked for 3 weeks only, so there is some interest rate risk with their proposal. Same collateral structure and a slightly lower debt service coverage ratio and a slightly higher legal fee. So with that assessment, First Foundation Bank came in with a stronger proposal on across all categories, with the only exception being the debt service coverage ratio. And in the analysis that we've prepared, the district is currently in expected to be in the 4 to 7 times debt service coverage ratio. So the slight differential in the covenant for the requirement is really small comparing to where the projections are coming out to be. That was the summary of the proposals. And we can go into some questions. I do want to highlight one thing is this refunding, and I want to make sure that everybody's very clear on that. This refunding takes care of all your unfunded liabilities that are on the books currently within the miscellaneous and safety classic plans. In the future years, depending on how CalPERS performs and what kind of changes they will make to the assumptions, as well as any types of differences in actual performance within the plans, the experiences of retirees and employees and salaries and all those things, there are likely to be scenarios where additional layers will be added to your unfunded liabilities. This refunding will take care of everything to date, and the savings will also allow you to prepare to address future increases to the unfunded liabilities. But I do want to make sure that everybody understands that by doing this, while you take care of existing problem, there is nothing you can do to alleviate any future increases to unfunded liabilities. That is something that cannot be controlled with any type of action at this time. But what you can do is you can prepare. And this is a great step towards being prepared. Thank you.
Are you ready for questions?
Yes, we're ready for questions.
Okay, I'll open it up to the board. Do you have any questions?
I have none.
I don't see anyone. Does any other director have questions? I'm not seeing everybody on the.
I have questions, but I think they might be for Mr. Clemens.
Okay, go ahead.
In the staff report, it says the president, general manager, and secretary of each fund designated and authorized representative. President is Linda Austin, you're the general manager. And who is the secretary? I thought your contract designated you as the secretary.
Yeah, that would be myself as well.
Okay, so that's just a little redundant there. And then I had another question. All right, it talks about, let's see, I'm in the resolution now on page 37. The amounts listed are 722,000 and 100,000. And then the obligations in amount not to exceed 9,500. So I was just wondering, those don't, the numbers in the whereas in the middle of the page don't add up to 9,500. So where's the?
Correct, 950,000.
Is so that the costs of doing the deal, or is that the delta?
Yeah, typically you put in a not to exceed amount that will be much more than you really need. Basically, it's those two amounts that we're paying off plus the financing costs, which right now I believe are estimated at 75,000.
That is correct.
But there could be some, the actual cost, depending on the date of the closing, to get us to the next payment date. Is that correct, Dimitri?
That is correct. What we're showing in the tables and the savings and the calculations, this is the more conservative scenario. There's likely, because if we are able to close sooner than the assumed date of end of May, most likely the savings will be even slightly better. And the payments may be slightly lower.
So we would expect the actual cost to be about just under 900,000, but the 950 is just chosen as a little cushion just in case. But we don't typically, when you do these deals, there's bids that would come in if it was put out to the market rather than privately placed. Banks may do a premium or a discount based on some coupon rate. And so that would require more bonds to be sold in certain circumstances, but that's not the case here. So it's more just a conservative number that we're going to stay under, but we're expecting it to be just under 900,000.
Okay. And then down on page 97, which is the form of the promissory note, that it says the principal amount is $3,016,000. Where does the $3 million come from?
Yeah, that's, so these documents are being approved in form, but those details will be worked out once we know the closing date. It won't be $3 million. That probably was carried over from a previous deal.
Okay. Yeah, I'm familiar with the work form. I'm familiar with form of documents. They just don't usually have specifics like that filled in. It would be like a blank or something.
Yeah, those are the things.
So that's why I was confused where that.
Yeah, we have to go through and clean up all those things. That's why the resolution basically says these people are authorized to take any and all actions. So we'll get those little details in the documents cleaned up to specifically address this deal.
Okay, thank you.
But good questions.
Okay, anyone else have any questions? I was wondering, the rate lock for 60 days, the interest rate 3.46, can you explain that? Do you just mean like it was 3.46 for 60 days, but it could change? Is that
right? So what it means is the interest rate will not change for 60 days from April 19, regardless of what's happening in the market. So if the rates start jumping up, that First Foundation has committed to keeping the rate at 3.46 for 60 days, which is plenty of time to close the transaction. Umpqua Bank only committed to keeping their rate for 3 weeks. And if there's an increase to the interest rates within the next 3 weeks, they have the right to increase the rate.
Okay, I guess that's it. Is there any other questions? I'll open up for public comment. Any public comment?
You wanna unshare your screen, Dimitri?
Yes.
There we go. There everybody is. Okay, so now we'll open public comment.
Yes, and just to remind the public, it's *9 if you're on your phone, and if you're on your computer or tablet, it is the raise hand button. And with that, President Austin, I have no hands raised.
Okay. All right. Well, I think this is a wonderful item on the agenda tonight. I'm very pleased. Thank you very much for Mr. Clemens and Dimitri and the other gentleman here. Thank you. So with that, we'll ask for a motion. If there's any more discussion or if someone wants to make a motion on this item.
I guess I get to make all the motions tonight. I'd like to make a motion. We approve a resolution authorizing a financial agreement and irrevocable payment instructions provided for the refinancing of the district's outstanding CalPERS unfunded acute liability.
As I'll second.
Okay, moved and seconded. May we get a roll call vote, please?
Yes, President, Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
Director Plogel?
Yes, and I think I seconded just before Director Gibson, but that's fine.
Sorry. And then President Austin?
Yes. All right, very good. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Dimitri. Thank you for all your efforts in our behalf.
Okay. Now we will do the review of the district's budget status as of March 31st, 2021. So is that Ms. Cassiola?
Yes, thank you, Ms. President Austin. So members of the board, President Austin, we have the third quarter budget review for agenda item 8B. So based on the status of the revenues and expenditures, there are no budget adjustments proposed at this time since all the funds are running on track. In every quarter review, the front-loaded expenses stand out since they are paid in full during the first half of the year, and then they cover the rest of the years in their entirety. So those are the water supply costs, the CalPERS UAL for both the safety and miscellaneous plans, which we just discussed, the LAFCO fees, the liability insurance, the regulatory permits with the State Water Resource Control Board for both the water and the wastewater fund, and then the boot allowance and the software maintenance that's done annually. So then in the staff letter, we've also identified other expenditures that are running high, but they're not front loaded. The first of those is in the administrative fund. This is where the election costs are budgeted, and the costs related to measure A20 in that was on the ballot for March 2020 and the election in November 2020, they were all charged to the district during the third quarter. The current budget only had funds budgeted for the November election, and the March 2020 costs, they were not encumbered from the previous budget and the previous year, but there are sufficient funds in, or sufficient savings in the administrative fund to cover those costs. Then the largest of the expenditures that look to be running high are in the water and the wastewater fund. Both of those funds had the overlay project. The district raised valves and utilities after the county performed a road overlay project here in the Oceano area. And there's still sufficient funds to cover both of those line items in each fund. So then there's a couple other funds that are running a bit high and over budget, but as most, all the funds have savings to cover this. And the first one's in the facilities funds under maintenance on structures. We repaired light fixtures on the outside of the admin building. And then in the water fund, the paving expense. This is from the field staff continuing to pave after they repair the water system on their own instead of with a contractor. And then the water meter budget, since we continue to move forward with the meter replacement program until the budget is pretty much fully expended on that line item. And then in revenues, the general fund, the revenues are where we expect it with the county's teeter collection system, where we get 80% in April and the rest, or we get 80% in December and the rest to follow in April. So we should see that in the next statement next month. And then for the utility revenues, they are tracking since 5 of the 6 billing cycles have been processed this year. The last 2 billing cycles, they reflect the new water rates that were approved in October 2020. We have provided a target versus actual revenue comparison in the water fund on page 162 of your agenda package. And it shows that the revenues are on track to slightly run over target for this year. Even with the new rate structure. So with that, if there's any other questions on particular line items or follow-up questions, I would be happy to answer them.
All right. Thank you very much. Carrie, does anyone have questions for Carrie on the budget?
No.
No question? Okay. Very good. Thank you so much. We'll open it now to public comment.
And yes, just to remind the public, it's star 9 on the phone to raise your hand. And if you're on a computer or tablet, it's the raise hand button. And with that, President Austin, I have no hands raised.
Okay. All right, that takes us to hearing items, which there are none. Do you have any late received written communications? Items. So I guess that will bring us to our closed session then.
So before, I think Director Replogle might have wanted to discuss IWMA on future agenda items. So I guess my question is, we originally had an item to send a letter to IWMA about district representatives and the alternate, and we were going to encourage them to follow the LAFCO process. But now we have the separate issue of the possible pullout of the county from IWMA, and we may want to send a letter to the county, if your board desires, to ask them to make sure they consider the impacts to special districts from such an action. So do you want to have that kind of combined in an item? And if so, like I said, the county will probably discuss it in July. So there's no super rush, but, you know, we can get it on the agenda. Do you prefer to have them packaged together or separate?
I think it would be fine to discuss them as a package. At this point, as I mentioned, we're not having effective representation by Mr. Enns at the IWMA. So replacing him sooner than later would be better. If the supermajority vote had not been called for and his vote was effective, then the polystyrene ordinance would have been repealed, despite the fact that we and other CSDs wanted to see it retained. So he can still do damage while he's there representing his own, personal interests. So if we could agendize just discussing these things sometime next month, I think that would be preferable.
Is that a consensus from the board? Do you want to talk about those items together? It would make sense from my standpoint.
It would make sense. I think it needs to, it depends on what other businesses we need to deal with. I don't think it doesn't have the highest priority in my book. But
I agree with Director, Vice President White.
I think we could probably get it on in May or June at the latest.
Yeah. Yeah. Because okay. I think the problem is it's a moving target. And we're making a decision and then the target moves. And so our decision is maybe half mute, half legitimate, half not so positive. So if we could wait a little longer, it's kind of like Central Coast Blue. They're all moving targets, so why are we acting right now when we can sit back and make an intelligent decision when the time is right?
Well, we could always discuss it, and then if there's not enough information to make a decision, if things are still changing, we could discuss it when we have more information. But we'd have gotten some of the preliminary discussion out of the way already.
Okay, I think I have enough.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
I would also like to propose that we agendize Central Coast Blue in the aspect of perhaps sending a letter to Pismo Beach, reminding them of our limited role at this point, that we don't have an agreement to participate in Central Coast Blue, that none of those details have been worked out, so that they're not stepping out of bounds with their statements, and then also discuss potentially weighing in with support for the positions, one or both of the positions of Arroyo Grande, that there needs to be provisions for public involvement as Central Coast Blue moves forward, as well as support for a project labor agreement.
But we aren't going to be.
I would not support a letter, and I wouldn't be interested in involving ourselves in what the city of Arroyo Grande does.
They can do whatever politically things they want to do, but I don't want to get involved in it, that's for sure.
I agree.
So
wholeheartedly.
What I'm seeing right now is that Pismo Beach is calling Oceano a partner. And if they're going to be making those sorts of statements, I don't think we would at all be out of line to support our partner, Arroyo Grande, in their positions at this point.
We aren't a partner with Arroyo Grande in their position.
We're not a partner with Pismo Beach either.
We're not a partner with Pismo Beach. We are a generic partner in the fact that we originally said we supported it, and we have not changed that position. So we have said, yes, we support the concept, and we've gone no further. And I don't think we should get involved in the political fight between Pismo Beach and Arroyo Grande, because it won't help Oceano in any way.
And there's nothing we can do to control what Pismo says or what Arroyo or anyone else says about us.
So I think we don't want to discuss the substance of it right now. It's just a question of, do we want to put this on the agenda to discuss at a future meeting?
No.
Any aspects?
No. Not right now.
It's not necessary to do it. So I am not in favor of putting it on the agenda.
So all right. Thank you.
Okay. I came across something from the CSDA Association in their newsletter today, and I was wondering if the board would have any interest in discussing applying for the District Transparency Certificate of Excellence. This is a free certification that the district would just need to follow a checklist to say that we're complying with a number of transparency practices. They have sample policies, Brown Act compliance, Public Record Act requests, reimbursement policy, annual disclosure, conflict of interest policy, code of ethics policy, board vacancy announcement, public budget hearing. I think we may comply with many of these things already. But this is something, if we got the certification, we could promote to the public that we are we're striving to be transparent, and we're certified to this mark of excellence. Is that something that the board would have any interest in discussing, whether we'd want to pursue?
It sounds like we're taking a lot of time from our staff, and I'm really, really concerned about pursuing water pipes and increased size of water pipes to fire hydrants.
This is something that an ad hoc committee could probably handle a lot of with minimal staff time. It's just a matter of going through our policies and seeing if there's anything that we need to modify or update.
I see no point in doing it.
I concur with Director Vice President White.
Director Vian, do you have any opinion? You're on mute.
It would be nice to have, to have it, but I don't know how time consuming it can get. So
What does it entail? What we have to, what kind of efforts do we take to get that award?
There's a checklist. There's a checklist that you go through and just certify that you meet the provisions. It's about 2 pages of small print. You know, basic ethics training for all board members, compliance with the Brown Act, you know, website meets certain conditions. It's, you know, if there's interest, I would go through this before it was on the agenda, and I could see what areas, you know, I'd be prepared to discuss what areas that we would need to make changes in, and we could talk about how much time would be involved if the board's interested in pursuing it. But, you know, that would, I don't have the answers to the questions now, and we can't discuss it now, but it's just if we put it on the agenda.
So what are we?
If you're willing to do the homework, Cynthia, and find out how much time it is, it sounds like we do all that stuff already, and it might be just one or two boxes that we need to do.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'd have to dig into it.
If you're willing to do that for, and it's not too, you know, because it sounds like we do most of that stuff, and it would be great if we could have that certification, right? It would look, make us look really good, I think, that we do all that stuff. So look into it. That's my opinion. Whatever makes you look good or better, let's do it.
What do we want to do?
Have her do the homework.
The homework. Came back and reported back what she thought that we would have to come up with. If there would be what we'd have to put into it to get that.
Well, okay. How does she do the homework? Going to staff and finding out where the policies are?
Well, all our policies are online, I believe, so I just need to look at them.
I just don't want to see it taking up staff time.
I don't want to see that either. So, I mean, if there's some way you could come back and do it, or it's something that we'd have to involve the staff in some lengthy time, I'm not in favor of that because we have our running of the district to do. So,
I could, easy enough to put an item on the agenda and have Director Replogle report what's involved.
All right.
And there's no rush on this, so put it on whenever it fits in. And just give me a heads up of a couple weeks of when you're thinking it'll be on there, so I'll have time to do my homework.
You tell me what date you want it on there, and we'll put an item. How about that?
Whatever. Well, it depends on when you have room, but you know, a month from now or later would be fine.
Okay, that's what we'll do then. Thank you, Mr. Clemens.
And then just the one last thing, and I don't know that this needs to be an agenda item. Maybe Mr. Clemens has thought about it already, but is there a plan yet for returning to in-person meetings or some sort of hybrid virtual in-person meetings?
So currently we're still working in the office alternating weeks while staff gets fully vaccinated. My goal is to have staff working back in the office in June. So that's staff. The only problem with board meetings is there's no telling what the community vaccination is. So I'm hesitant to come back to in-person meetings until such time that there's direction from the state. So I'm kind of waiting to hear what their direction is on, you know, it might be the state reopening June 15th, like their plan, and some of these executive orders are rescinded and we have to meet in person. I don't know. I haven't heard what the plan is. I'm thinking more but it's going to be longer term than that. I know there are certain bills going through the legislature on keeping the ability to have Zoom meetings in an emergency, but that's a separate issue. So as far as, I guess I don't have a plan of when. I'm more waiting to hear direction from the state, which hasn't come. And I'd lean more towards the not having in-person meetings just because of not reaching herd immunity yet. So
there are some CSDs who never stopped meeting in person. You know, there are some that meet in person, but not, they don't allow the public to come in person. It's just the board. And the public attends virtually. So there's a number of ways to do it without going back. Oh, and then there's also the option of having limited public accessibility with social distancing and masks to keep the number of people in the boardroom down. So, I mean, there's a number of options aside from going back to the way it was before.
Spread out in the fire bay.
Wait and see what the state comes back with, I believe. I think June 15th, we can hope that will be the...
I certainly think we need an agenda item to discuss your desires as a board when to reopen in-person meetings. So, but I wouldn't consider that and probably until after July.
I'm just going to say after July. I think if we can live, if we can make it through the 4th of July, then we'll really know.
Maybe we'll look to that time. Okay. So let's see, but we're going to go to closed session. Do I ask for public comment on closed session?
Please do.
Announce it, Jeff. Are you going to announce the closed session?
I will. Did you take public comment on closed session first, or do you want me to announce it first?
Well, I said public comment, but I thought you'd announce it, then we'd do public comment.
Okay, of course. The board will adjourn following public comment for two items in closed session pursuant to Government Code 54956.9. There will be a conference with district council regarding the receipt of a tort claim. There's one matter. And item two is pursuant to Government Code 54956.9D4. It's conference with legal counsel to determine whether to initiate litigation. And there's one matter there as well.
Okay, is there any public comment on our closed session?
And just to remind the public, it's *9 on the phone and it's the raise hand button on your computer or tablet. And I have one hand raised, so I will unmute the first speaker, Ms. Tacker.
Good evening again, Julie Tacker. And I just want to thank your staff for providing me the claim to review before you went to closed session. That's part of the transparency that Cynthia thinks your board deserves an award for. So just circle back to that. It's worth pursuing that. Your agency has come a long way from, say, 8 years ago, and you guys do comply with a lot of the things I'm always watching for. So best to you. And I don't like initiation of litigation, so it better be good. And what time was the report out? Maybe you can tell me when to come back from dinner.
What time do we report? Do we know? We don't know. How long it's going
to be. I don't think we know, but my guess would be 15 or 20 minutes in closed session, probably at tops.
Thank you.
Mr. Clemens, do you have any insight into that?
I think the last time we did it, didn't we report out at the beginning of the next meeting?
That's what we do because we go off. We can't get back.
Oh, okay. So, okay.
So we report out at the beginning of the next meeting, not tonight. Correct?
We can certainly do that. And perhaps is there a way if there is any action taken beyond no reportable action, is there a way to just post that on the website in some manner?
Yes.
And what we'll post, if there's a report out of closed session that's anything other than no reportable action, district staff will post that on the website, and the board will also report it out again at the beginning of the next meeting.
Okay, then we will, I guess, take us off camera.
Thank you.
Whatever we
do. I will just need a moment to lock the meeting. So if you guys want to take a quick